Boys Guide to the Galaxy podcast, the official podcast of GalacticVoyage.com. We talk about Star Wars,
fanboy style.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Welcome to Fanboys Guide to the Galaxy, the official podcast of GalacticVoyage.com. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan Zasso, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Eric. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. And this week we've got two awesome guests. We've got our good friend Aaron from JediDirectory.com. How are you, Aaron?
Good. How are you guys today?
I'm doing good. And we've also got from Big Shiny Robot, Brian Young. How are you, Brian?
Hello. This will all be going better as soon as we get to talk about Clone Wars.
Right. This week we're going to be talking about The Hunt for Zero. And what were your initial thoughts? Let's start with Brian. I mean, we know that this is a, we've kind of known that Quinlan Voss was going to be in this season, but let's just start with, did he live up to your expectations?
I think he did. I mean, I've been trying really hard to distance myself from all of the established continuity of anything that we're getting more of in Clone Wars, and just try to enjoy it for what it is in Clone Wars. And he really, he worked for me in a lot of ways. He felt like the perfect mix between Qui-Gon and the dude from The Big Lebowski. And it worked really well for me. He was very entertaining to me.
All right, what did you think of him, Aaron? Did he live up to your expectations?
Yeah. You talking to me or Eric?
Let's start with Aaron.
Oh, I didn't hear you. I didn't hear the end. Sorry.
Yeah, I think he did. I actually really enjoyed him in the show. And, I mean, unlike Brian, you know, he said he's trying to distance himself from the established continuity. I'm, like, so into the established continuity for that character. I've been reading, you know, those comics ever since they came out. And, you know, I pretty much own every, you know, piece of literature that Quinlan Voss has been in. So I kind of already had some, you know, existing thoughts about him and what I thought his character should be like. But I thought they did really great with him in Clone Wars. He looked almost identical to the character that's in the comics. They even got it down to, like, the detail of his, you know, the tattoo that he had on his left arm, you know, and the braid that he has in his hair. Like, it was very identical. And even some of the, you know, the force powers that he showed. So I thought they were very true to the character, and, you know, I thought overall they did a really great job with him.
Yeah, I thought he was really good in that. Not only was his character great, but, you know, how other characters reacted to him. You know, Cody, you know, admires his reputation, but Obi-Wan calls him crazy. So it's they did hold true to the original character, and I thought that was really awesome.
This is actually my first introduction to Quinlan Voss. Like, I never read any of the comics with him or anything.
So they're really good. You should get in on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should.
Yeah, the comics that he's in, like, for anybody that's listening that hasn't had a chance to read the comics that he's in, when he's first introduced into the comics, it's a story that they call Twilight, not like the vampires, but the title of the book is called Twilight, and I think it's Republic, 19 through 22, issues 19 through 22, and then he's pretty much all throughout the Republic comics from there on, up until they finish the run in the 80s, they finished the run. So, you know, if you're interested in reading more about Quinlan Voss, you know, definitely pick up the Republic comic book series. He's a huge character in there, and he has a great story arc, so I definitely recommend that.
Yeah, I might go to Amazon and check that out. He reminded me of a less greasy Gene Simmons.
I like what Brian said about the dude. And Brian didn't even have, like, a line that...
Obi-Wan asked him a question or said something really pointed to him. He's like, well, that's your opinion, man. You know, just like the dude. And yep. He seems very dude-like. I mean, not that he's lazy or anything, just he's really laid back, but he's also very business-like, which is why he's kind of he's like Qui-Gon. He's like that hippie sort of Jedi in this. And I know he was a lot darker in the comics, and it would be really cool to explore some of that on the show, but I'm not sure if there's room to. But I think as a primer for people to say, like, I want to know more about that character, I think this was perfect.
He's the Phil Jackson of the Star Wars universe.
He's zen. Very zen.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you were saying, Brian, about, you know, some people were kind of expecting to be like a darker character, and I have to admit, I kind of felt that way too, because in the comics you do get this feeling that he's this almost like dark, brooding character, but it's kind of like what we put on that character, because he's really only ever been in the comics, so it's, you can't, you know, hear his voice or his tone or that type of thing. So I think that, you know, I went back today and actually read through some of those old issues, but with a new perspective on the character because of the Clone Wars, and it actually kind of made sense. He, you know, he does have some humor. He does have a lightness about him when he's not, you know, in all those, you know, the situations that he was in the comics. But, you know, so I felt like they weren't necessarily too much different than they were in the comics. Just, I think our perception about him in the comics may have been a little off, and that was
something he was. He was very aggressive on the show. I mean, like, when he slashes open Zero's mom's place, you know, like, that's obviously not the sort of move a more calm and calculated Jedi like Obi-Wan would make, and it did offer that hint that Voss is sort of a loose cannon and a little bit edgier and darker and more aggressive.
He doesn't have the best relationship with the Hutts either.
It would have been almost better if they, or not better, but it would have been good if they had played Hostage Crisis, you know, before this episode aired. Do you guys agree with that? I mean, since this takes place directly after, you know, newcomers to the show, you know, they're not going to know what happened in between, you know, the evil plans and this episode.
But as far as a new, I agree. I think it would be great to bookend the episodes that come prior before the episodes. But if you're new to the show, it's not going to seem out of place to watch it out of order at all, because they all get wrapped up with the opening titles. Between the fortune cookie and Tom Kane's opening narration, they bring you up to speed with all the most vital bits of information you need to know. So I don't think a new viewer would have been lost, necessarily.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you just said there. I think they summed up what had happened before in the intro enough that any new viewer could have come in and seen this as a standalone episode that made sense without needing to view the prior episodes.
Okay. Looks like I'm alone on that one.
But the timeline jumping that they've been doing all season has been a bit confusing, which I know has been a subject that a lot of fans have been talking about. So I'm hoping with the new, you know, costume changes that seems like that are coming out, you know, they're not going to do too much more of that, I don't think. But, you know, you never know. But I don't think they would go back to those old models unless they really had to.
My theory about that is that a lot of these are episodes that they developed for the other two seasons, and that starting with Heroes on Both Sides, we're actually going to get what Season 3 is supposed to look like, and that they were giving us all of the leftovers from Season 1 and 2 story arcs, and then now we're heading into new territory.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more dark stories for the next half of the season, because all I could remember during Season 2 was everything on Twitter was about how dark the new season's going to be, and we haven't really seen anything dark yet, so I think the new season, the new episodes are going to be heading in a different direction, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. When this episode started, or not when it started, but, you know, towards the beginning, we see Nal Hutta. There was, I would admit, I was a little taken aback by, you know, just how, you know, what they started it with was pretty much like a musical number with a Snice Noodles, and, you know, in a pretty dead-on Temple of Doom reference.
I loved that, personally. I absolutely adored it. and the dancers, like the really scantily clad dancers with the hot heads on them, was such a nice touch. And if you can tell, like, if you listen closely, Cy Snoodles is actually kind of singing to the same cadence as Anything Goes from Temple of Doom, and it's just a great introduction to her character, doubly so to act as misdirection, I think. It's like, if you go back and if right off the bat you say, wow, that's Temple of Doom, you associate Cy Snoodles with Willie Scott, and she's a ridiculous airhead. And so when Cy Snoodles kind of makes that turn mid-episode, you know, or toward the end, it's a little bit more surprising if you bring that baggage in of what you think they're going for.
Yeah. I mean, I admit I was extremely surprised when she pulled out the pistol. And, you know, mainly because she didn't look menacing, or maybe it was because of the beginning there. You know, it's just, you kind of got caught off guard.
I was surprised just to see her in the Clone Wars. It's like, what? You're doing a backstory for her? Like, I'll admit, when I first saw it, I was a bit taken aback by it, but I think they pulled it off really good. I enjoyed her backstory.
Yeah, the intro, I didn't make the connection to the Indiana Jones movie, but I do remember it just kind of seemed a little weird to me, and I know I was watching it with some friends that are not Star Wars fans, and they were all just kind of like, what is this? Like, what are we watching? So it was definitely, there was a strangeness about it. I think if you're not a fan of Star Wars, you don't recognize some of the characters, or like Cy Snoodles, you know, a lot of non-Star Wars fans really wouldn't recognize her right away. So I think some of the more casual viewers may have been kind of taken aback, like, who is this character? Why is she important? So it did, yeah, I could see how it would kind of, you know, be something where initially people would be like, this is strange, like, what are we watching? But, you know, it was pretty cool, though.
See, now, with my perspective, I watched the episode with my kids, and they're 7 and 8, and, like, half the shows they watch just break out in a song for no reason, so, and they love Temple of Doom, and they love Return of the Jedi, so for them, it was just, like, this perfect mix of, like, yes, we've got a song on Clone Wars, you know. So it just depends on the audience. I liked it, but I could see where an uber-jaded sort of non-fan would be like, man, why do you keep telling me to watch this show?
That's exactly the reaction that my brother was sitting next to me, and he's like, you keep telling me to watch this show every week, and you promise it's going to get better. But I'm like, I'm loving it, but I guess maybe the people that really aren't as into it maybe don't give it as, aren't as forgiving maybe with some of that stuff.
Well, it's par for the course. I mean, like, as far as Cy Snoodles goes, I mean, if you recognize the character, if you've watched Return of the Jedi, and just remember how ridiculous her dance number was there, even the original version, you know, setting aside the special edition version, that's what she does. She interrupts the story for inappropriate song and dance numbers. Like, that's her biggest character development, and they stayed true to that completely.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of the character. I don't think anyone, you know, says their favorite character is Cy Snoodles. But it was definitely interesting to see a backstory. You know, and especially in the end, you know, how you see her go to Jabba. Going back to Nal Hutta, when she had confronted Zero, it kind of seems like their thoughts on my thoughts on their relationship are kind of manipulative. I mean, Zero kind of looks like he's just sort of manipulating Cy Snoodles just to, you know, get out of jail. But then, obviously, she's not as innocent as she seems either. Yeah.
I know exactly what you're saying. And that was one of the things I had written down in my notes about. It was kind of a misdirect almost with when she came up to him in the prison cell. It did seem like, even with the way his body language was, he'd turn away from her and his eyes were kind of flipping back and forth, like he was almost trying to manipulate her to help him. And I thought that was an interesting thing, because she was definitely, like, all about him, you know, my love, or all this different things she was saying about her fluid sac and all that stuff. And so, you know, you get the impression that this girl is all about him, and he's not necessarily all about her, he's just kind of trying to use her. So I thought that was interesting how that it almost flipped, you know, by the end of the show. It was more him, you know, being all about their relationship, and her, you know, taking advantage of him. So that was a nice misdirect, and I liked that.
Yeah, it definitely was a story diversion that works really well.
That fluid sack comment disgusted me.
A quick note here, you know, I admit that the episode, when it started off, it was a little weird. You know, we had the singing, and then we had the all this stuff with the weird relationship stuff with Zero and Cy Snoodles. But then you know, it really gets good when we see Kenobi and Voss. I mean, that's really where, especially when they travel to Nal Hutta, that's really where it picks up. And you know, you see Cad Bane, and you know, and that's kind of the rest of the episode, and it's just awesome.
I think this episode was one of the best examples of Cad Bane being very angelized from the Man with No Name trilogy. He's a very cold and calculating, and I love that line where he's like, I'm a little sick of getting paid for the same job too. It's not my fault, you know, like he was just very cool and calculating in this episode. I really dug him.
Yeah, definitely, definitely Good, Bad, and the Ugly vibe there.
His intro to the show reminded me of, Boba Fett in Return of the Jedi, when he just walks out of the corner in Jabba's palace and proved that he was quite a match against Obi-Wan and all the Jedi.
Right, yeah. Because, you know, definitely it kind of, I don't want to say he's better than Jango Fett, but I think he has some skills that Jango Fett, you know, might not possess, and that makes, you know, him a threat. You know, if he can, you know, subdue two Jedi, and then, but, you know, Jango Fett obviously didn't.
I think the difference between Bane and Jango is that Jango actually has a codified sense of honor, and Bane is after a check, which is why, like, he's not even, like, if you notice, like, he's not even interested in fighting the Jedi. Until he's like, well, there is $1 million bounty on you guys per head, so I might as well kill you. Like, it's all cold calculated numbers with him. There's no honor with him whatsoever, whereas with Jango, there did seem to be, and maybe I'm just reading way too much into Jango, but that's the impression I got out of Jango. He wasn't just there for a job, that there was some samurai behind it.
Yeah, I was very, like, when they first started fighting, the first thing I thought is that these two Jedi are going to take him down quick, because that's just the initial, you know, thing I typically think. You know, these Jedi, they have force powers, they should be able to, you know, use force pull or grip or whatever, and just be able to stop him. So the fact that he was able to put up such a fight and escape both Jedi, you know, it definitely makes him a formidable opponent to the Jedi, and, you know, we're going to see, I'm sure, more of that in the future. But it did kind of, it kind of was a little bit unbelievable, I guess, that a non-Force user would be able to take on those two guys so easily. But I think it just kind of showed that how powerful he is, and that he's something they have to worry about now.
Mm-hmm. It almost seems like he has, you know, specific weapons for taking out the Jedi, especially we've seen him use that electrical shocker thing on his wrist before. With Ahsoka, and that, you know, takes care of the Jedi pretty fast.
Well, if you notice though about his fighting style is that Bane was out to disable one long enough to fight the other, because he knew he couldn't win in a stand-up fight, and the second that he actually was working one-on-one with one of them, Toto helped him, you know, so he wasn't, he fought them to a standstill long enough to escape, but it wasn't like he disabled them so they couldn't chase him. They were hot on his heels, he just happened to make it to his ship faster.
Yeah, and we got to see Toto with a lightsaber and Bane with a lightsaber. Pretty much everybody in that fight was handling a lightsaber at one point.
Yeah.
But Bane, as soon as he picked up the lightsaber, I was kind of annoyed by it, because, like, oh no, don't tell me they're going to have him actually hold his own with a Jedi. But, you know, it was just like three little parries and then he got disarmed, so I was glad that they didn't have like an extended lightsaber battle between him and Obi-Wan. I think that would have taken it to a whole new level. That would have been a little bit too unbelievable that he'd be able to come up against a Jedi like that.
I'm surprised Obi-Wan didn't take his hand off. I mean, that's Obi-Wan's MO. He did it to Sam Wessel, he did it to Dr. Evans and Ponda Baba. Like, it's just like Obi-Wan cuts hands off, you know. I'm impressed that Bane left there with both hands.
Well, they couldn't cut off his arm in this episode because this takes place before Cargo of Doom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it does. But they've got good prosthetics in that universe.
True.
It's true. And how about those Jedi jumping skills that we got to see throughout that entire episode?
Yeah. Over and over and over again.
They were like grasshoppers. I was like, wow, is there like a force ability that I'm not aware of, the jumping force power?
Yeah.
But Obi-Wan does that a couple of times in Phantom Menace.
Yeah, and it's definitely been seen before, but just seeing it happen like so many times in the same, you know, the same episode like that, it was almost like they were overdoing it a little bit.
I'll admit, like, the first time I watched the episode, I was a little grated by it, but then, like, upon, like, second and third viewings, I really didn't even notice it. It was just a little bit abrupt the first time.
And the terrain that they were on called for it, too, so it was, yeah. You know, it made sense, but it was just funny to see them hopping around like that. It was almost like they were flying even at some points.
I'm just getting memories of the Gendy series where Mace Windu literally flies through the air and destroys that huge ship.
Yeah, I was thinking Gendy too, but I was thinking Anakin versus Asajj in the treetops.
Oh yeah.
And, like, jumping around. Yeah, it was very similar style to that.
I'd like to see them reinterpret some of that kind of stuff on the show, and I know Filoni has said that, like, this Clone Wars doesn't necessarily exist in the same continuity as that other Clone Wars show, so that we might still see pieces of that, like, reinterpreted. So, yeah. I'd be interested to see some of that.
Yes, that would be very cool.
What was your guys' thoughts on Zero's mom?
Gross. If they were trying to gross me out, they did a good job. That was maybe the grossest character I've seen on Star Wars.
It should have made her more slimy, though. It would have been grosser. This episode grossed me out. From Snice Noodles kissing Zero to Zero's mom to Snice Noodles fluid sack.
Zero's mom didn't bother me so much at all. Like, I got a really kind of cool, like, backwoods Cajun New Orleans vibe out of her, which is like, which fits a little bit with Zero's kind of personality, so it seemed pretty logical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and she was,
they brought up her having a ship though, which kind of confused me. Why would she need a ship? Where is she gonna go?
yeah, I know. It must be a pretty big ship.
Either that, or it's a ship she grew out of, so she doesn't use it anymore.
Yeah. Well, she told Zero to bring it back with full power, so she probably plans on going somewhere.
Yeah, I thought she was a cool character, though. She was definitely gross, but she was cool. I liked how, the biggest hut that you've ever seen, and yeah. I think that was cool to show that, you know, the huts can reach that type of size, I guess, if left long enough. But that, I thought she was a cool character. I liked the name Mama the Hutt, you know, that was, you know, I thought she was cool. I liked that character.
Yeah, there were some very comedic moments.
She had some good lines.
Yeah. You know,
like your
voice work
back right in time for dinner.
Voice was kind of lazy though.
I think my favorite of the Hutts was the Marlon Brando hut that was sitting next to Gardula.
Yes.
That sounded exactly like Marlon Brando and looked very much like him from The Godfather.
Yeah.
That was just a really nice touch. One of the things I love the most about the show is seeing all the other films that they draw from that I love so much in it. And that helps make up for bad episodes every now and again, where it's like, well, this episode wasn't exciting, but it was a shot-for-shot Star Wars remake of Alfred Hitchcock's Notorious. So, I'm in. You know, sign me up.
Did you guys notice the Marlon Brando? I think the name of the hut was Marlo the Hut. Yeah. But did you notice the hairpiece that it had was actually like some kind of creature? It wasn't actual hair.
No, I saw something, but on the second viewing, but I really couldn't tell what it was.
I didn't pick it up until I read the episode guide, and they mentioned in the episode guide that it was some kind of creature. But I thought that was interesting, and you can definitely pick it up when you watch it again. You can actually see the eyes on the creature that when it moves around on its head.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Gamorrean guards. How that they were a really nice touch to the Clone Wars. It was awesome seeing them in a new format.
Yeah, they were animated very well. The design, adapting them from the classic trilogy to Clone Wars was really, it was very good. And part of the reason that I love getting deeper and deeper into the show, into the production schedule of the show, is that they can actually spend time and make really cool models for characters like Sice Noodles and the Gamorreans and whoever else. And the more we get into the show, the more crazy the sorts of Star Wars creatures that we'll be able to get, I'm sure.
The one thing I thought was interesting about Sai was the reasoning behind her killing Zero. And because when she kills him, right before she kills him, she says, you know, this will teach you not to mess with someone's heart. I forget the exact words.
Yeah.
But basically, it was almost like she was killing him out of revenge or because he had betrayed her in the past. But then, in the end, she's also collecting, you know, a paycheck for it, too. So it was like, what was her ultimate goal there? Was it revenge as the main goal, or was it the money, or was it both? So I thought that was kind of interesting. And the other thing, too, is just to be the EU nerd, I guess, but, you know, they always, if you read about the huts in the EU, they specifically say that huts can take multiple blaster wounds before any vital organs are reached to kill them, so they can survive, you know, pretty much any attack from a blaster. So the fact that he was taken down so quickly made me think, you know, Zero must have some pretty thin skin. He must not be like the other huts.
Were you guys sad to see Zero die?
A little bit, yeah. I originally did not like Zero, but, you know, over some of the past few episodes, I thought he was quite cool.
You know, I don't mind Zero one way or the other. Like, and I know that if they ever want to revisit a Zero story, that they're not shy about going back in the timeline whatsoever. But it was really funny. Like, I watched that episode with my son, and we get to that point, and Anakin just cheers. He goes, "Yes, finally, they killed him. I hated his voice." Wow, I had no idea that you had such pent-up anger about his voice. Like, he literally jumped out of his chair and cheered. It was hilarious.
I was the same way at the movie theater when I saw the Clone Wars. Like, when I first saw him, I was thinking, I hope he dies in this movie. But then, over the years, I've grown to like Zero.
Yeah, I like Zero a lot. I think he's a hilarious character. I love the voice and the personality. So when he took a blaster shot to the heart, I was sad. I didn't want to see him die yet. So I hope they who knows, maybe he's not really dead, but, you know, I hope they at least give us some flashbacks of him in the future, because I'll miss him.
It's obviously going to be him and Qui-Gon Jinn going on a mission into the Force world.
Qui-Gon riding Zero.
Yeah, something tells me Zero is not becoming one with Force. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Didn't he disappear in the background?
deleted scene.
Did you guys notice the Wizard of Oz reference when Zero died?
No.
He whispered, what a world," like in like the Wicked Witch.
Oh, you know what? I read that in the episode guide, but I hadn't picked up on it when I viewed it. No.
I didn't notice it at first, but then I saw that, and then I rewatched it, and I noticed it.
I'm curious, Aaron, since you're the EU nerd, on your perspective, while we're talking about Hutts, about Gardula.
Yes. About the fact that she's supposed to be dead?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, the game that she died in, I never played Bounty Hunter, so I didn't even know that she was supposed to be dead, so it didn't, you know, like we've said before, when it comes to EU, typically you only get upset if something that you care about is messed with. So the fact that I didn't really care about that, you know, it didn't faze me, but the fact that when people did start talking about it, I was like, oh, well, maybe they, you know, maybe they should do some sort of a retcon with that, just because there are fans of that game. But, you know, I thought it'd be cool if they gave her, like, a really big, like, bite mark scar on her side or something, like she actually got away from the Krat Dragon. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a big deal to me personally, but I know there's people out there that didn't like to see the fact that she was still alive. I was going to say, I think Leland Chi actually, he made a reference to it on Twitter, where he basically just said that the Krat Dragon found her undigestible or something like that. So, you know, I don't think that's canon or anything, but, you know, that was Leland's take on it.
I'm wondering if there's going to be a point where, in order to deal with a lot of these continuity problems, like, they split off sort of, like, the printy, like, how DC Comics has got, like, Earth 1 and Earth 2 and Earth Prime, and Marvel has, you know, the 616 universe and Ultimate Comics, where there's cornerstones of the universe that are identical across all the universes, but, you know, the movies and cartoons are one universe, and although some of the same events from the movies and the cartoons happen in the EU, it's its own universe, and maybe try to get people to start thinking about it like that instead of one huge continuity.
I think that's what they're going to have to do eventually. There's no way. It used to seem like there was things that, you know, they could fix this or they can fix that, and they've fixed things in the past. But it's gotten to the point now, especially with stuff coming up, I think, with Asajj Ventress and even with Darth Maul, like, it seems like there's going to be some issues with, you know, what planet he originates from. And I think they're going to have to get to the point where it's just going to be two separate things, because they can't coexist with some of these changes that they're making. You know, I don't know if they'll just continue to ignore the fact that they contradict. I know it seems go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, if you're George Lucas and you haven't read 90% of this stuff, like, why would you care?
Right, you know? I completely agree with that, and he doesn't care, and he doesn't, and he shouldn't really. I mean, it's, you know, that's his prerogative. It's his world. So I think, and it's funny because it seems so inconsistent, because you have the people, you have George, who says, he's even stated in the past that it's two separate worlds, two separate universes, but then you have people, other people at Lucasfilm, that say, no, everything is one big story, and we're gonna fix it all, like Leland and guys like Ben Pablo. So it's interesting, because you have two different sides of the story from the same company. So I don't know. I don't know what they'll do. I don't even know what I want. You know, as a big EU fan, I wish that they could keep everything consistent. But at this point, it's gotten so convoluted that I don't think it's possible anymore.
I was talking to Aaron Alston over the weekend. He writes a whole bunch of books in the EU.
Right, yeah.
I'm talking to the wrong audience that would need an introduction to Aaron Alston. but he was saying, like, it's like they all know that they're playing in George's driveway with George's toys, and every once in a while he's just going to back his car up and say, get out of the way, and break all their toys and just back up right up over them. You know, they, right. Like, they do that. They play in the they play right behind his truck, you know, in his driveway, knowing that that's a possibility, and they don't take it too seriously. You know,
yeah, so I think
we should take a similar attitude.
Yeah, and I agree with that. You know, I know some fans take it way too seriously and get upset when things are changed. And I've tried to not be that way, and I don't think I am that way. But, you know, I think some fans get a little upset when they feel like maybe some of the changes they're making are unnecessary, or it's almost like they're trying to change things. But, yeah, I agree with you, though. It's George's world. Let him do what he wants to it, and then if they want to try to fix it after the fact, they can. If not, you know, that's their prerogative. I'm going to keep watching it no matter what.
To me, it's not a big deal if they contradict the EU, because it is George's world and he can do what he wants. But I do get sick of seeing people complain about it. Like, I see it on Big Shiny Robot on your review. I see it on YouTube. I see it everywhere, and it makes me mad to see it all the time. Same with the prequel hate.
Oh, the people, hey, don't get me started. But it seems to me the stuff that gets changed is so minor, though. Like, there were so many Star Wars fans that were like, wait, what? There's a problem because Gardula the Hutt's alive? Didn't they only just mention her? You know, right. I was excited to think that maybe we'd get some extra glimpse into what Anakin's life before Watto was. You know? But, you know, we didn't, and she was an extra in this episode in the same way she was an extra in Phantom Menace, and like I don't know why anybody could take it so seriously. Same with the whole Greedo the Elder debate, you know, or any of the EU problems that have arisen out of Clone Wars.
Yeah, I think some of the things that you just mentioned, yeah, I agree, they're very minor. There's other things that are more of a major issue that, you know, when it comes to the Mandalorians or even, like, Asajj Ventress, they're about to completely switch up her backstory.
Like, not being a Mandalorian?
Right. And a lot of these things have effects more... They reach further than just this series or just little things. They're going to affect entire storylines, entire comic series. You know, like Aura Sing not having force powers. That basically wipes out an entire series of comics and even reaches on into the novels, the ongoing novels that are out now, Legacy of the Force and that kind of stuff. You know, she shows up in those novels with force powers. So there's it reaches further and it kind of messes with stuff that people have invested themselves in, so
but,
although I don't necessarily condone the people's anger toward it, I could see people's frustration.
And this is a problem I had talking to people about like the ending of Lost, where they invested all of that time and enjoyment for 6 years, and then the last episode comes out and they were into it, and then they didn't like the last episode, so now all of a sudden they feel like all of the joy and entertainment they got out of the prior 6 years were somehow wasted because it came to a point suddenly they didn't like it. And so I think, like, discarding or saying that it even just wipes out all this stuff, it just seems like a little drastic. Like, it didn't wipe it out. It's still there. I can still read it. I can still enjoy it for what it was. Okay. But it doesn't fit completely, but that doesn't make it bad anymore.
That's a great analogy. I mean, you know, it's about enjoying it, you know, at least while it's there. And you just interpret it how you want to, and I don't think that anything, you know, after it's made, if you enjoyed it when it first came out, then you enjoy it. I mean, it's not like something's going to change the past and how you enjoyed it.
Right.
Yeah,
it's,
exactly.
This is
and I love the ending of Lost, by the way.
So did I.
Same here. But to me, this is like a fake universe, so you can take what you want and not take what you don't want. You can believe what you want. You don't have to... It's because George has its canon doesn't mean it has to fit your canon. You can make your own canon.
Right.
No, it's...
Personally, I agree, but I like George's view over that
of the Clone Wars.
I don't know. It's like when something goes through so many generations and so many iterations, like you take a look at, you know, I'm a big Batman nerd, and Batman's gone through so many different perspectives and sort of writers' takes on him, and you know, he's been around for 75 years, and there's just so many different interpretations of what Batman is and how he was that I take the ones I like and revisit those as often as possible, and I ignore the ones that were kind of sucky, you know? And it's going to be the same way with Star Wars. It's only going to get worse as time goes on. Not worse, but better. I mean, we're going to get more stuff that we do like, more stuff that we don't like, more stuff that we wish never happened, and we're just going to have to pick and choose what pieces of Star Wars we like. And I know I'm completely contradicting everything I've ever said about how people, if they like Star Wars, should like all six movies, but I'm limiting my analysis to just the EU.
Right. And I completely agree with you, Brian. I think that, you know, in the end, there's no way that they're going to be able to keep all this stuff straight and keep everything in, you know, a perfect continuity. It's just impossible, and it's just going to get to the point. And as the Clone Wars continues to come out, and especially if they come out with a live-action series, I think that it's going to be even more of a delineation between George's vision and what's already out there. And I just hope that Lucasfilm kind of makes that official at some point and says, hey, this is an alternate universe and this isn't. And that's where I think the confusion comes in when they're people at Lucasfilm keep saying, oh no, it's still all the same thing, it's going to fit, we're going to fix it, you know. I don't think that's going to happen.
They're calling it the EU, you know. They're not calling anything in the movies or the TV show part of the EU. Those are part of the universe, so I think they're already doing that. And maybe some people at Lucasfilm are saying, oh, it's one big universe, and from a certain point of view it is. But I think they've already delineated as a company, this is Star Wars and this is the expanded universe. And I think a lot of people, both inside and outside of the company, don't make that delineation, even though we've already got a name for it.
Right. Who knew this was going to all turn into an EU discussion, right?
It's good.
Yeah, so, but I can see both sides, and I think I fall somewhere in the middle. I'm not the extreme fan that gets really upset over things, and I'm also not the ultra optimist that, you know, thinks that, you know, just pick and choose what you want. You know, I kind of fall somewhere in the middle, but I can definitely see both sides, and I'm going to enjoy Star Wars no matter what. Whatever they decide or however they decide to go with it. You know, I love Clone Wars, even though it completely contradicts all the comics that I love. I still love both of them, and I'm going to continue to love both of them.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm definitely somewhere in the middle.
But I think we could have predicted that it would have turned into an EU discussion. Just the elephant in the room, or the hut in the room, as it were. You know, I don't know. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how much email I got because I posted that clip with Gardula in it. And I think Tracy at Lucasfilm might have done that to me on purpose, where she's like, I'm going to direct all of this Brian's way, which is why she gave me the clip. You know, well, actually, to be honest, I don't think they had any idea. Why would they?
Yeah, I had no idea, and I'm huge into the EU. I guess the video games are not really my forte, though, so maybe that's why I hadn't picked up on that. But I never would have known, except all the backlash that happened.
Yeah. Well, trust me, I posted the clip, so I got the brunt of the email, and it was not me.
I promise, Brian, none of those emails were for me, I promise.
No, I know.
People send harsh emails to you ever, Brian?
Do people what?
Like, ever send, like, you know, like, harsh emails?
Oh, all the time. Like, when I was writing those rebuttals of the Red Letter Media review of Phantom Menace, I would get probably like two or three emails a week, like cursing my name. But on the contrary, I'd also get two or three emails a week of people saying, like, I thank you for your perspective because it's mine too, but the internet is so full of bullies that I'm afraid to say it publicly, so I'm just going to let you know personally.
Yeah,
I don't see why people do that. Why do they bitch to you? It's not like you did anything. It's not like you made it.
the thing is that people aren't very smart, and I put my email address on everything, like on all my articles, so they think, oh, this guy's in contact with people, and I don't have any contact information for anybody else. His opinion's the one who riled me up, so I'm going to write him my opinion, because obviously he cares enough to care.
Yeah.
I've been seeing the negative opinions against Phantom Menace, against the whole prequel trilogy for years, and it's always upset me, and I've always tried to retaliate and praise the prequels, but I always get bullied down.
Eric, you and Brian, since you didn't get to go to the C5, you didn't get to see Brian's... He had a whole panel on prequel appreciation, so I got to be in there and watch that whole thing, and there's... I mean, people love the prequels, you know, that you could tell just from that panel, the whole room was packed. It was like standing room only, and it was just all positive vibes in there about the prequels. So I think, like Brian was saying, sometimes people are afraid to stand up for something they like because they're afraid of what people will say or that people are going to attack them on the internet. But, yeah, I think, you know, there's more love for the prequels out there than I think people care to admit.
It seems to me that most actual Star Wars fans do like the prequels. I mean, you go to listen to the Forcecast, pretty much everybody in the chat likes the prequels. Like, over the past 2 years, when I became more involved in the Star Wars fan universe, most of the people I've talked to do like the prequels. It's just that the people who aren't really fans that just like to make fun of it get the loudest voice.
Yeah. I mean, they see everyone else making fun of it, so that means that they have to make fun of it too, right?
Somebody on YouTube once told me that if you like the prequels, you aren't a Star Wars fan. And I think I said, it says Star Wars on it, and I like it, so I must be a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those kind of... I'm a Star Wars apologist, so I like anything you put the Star Wars label on. I enjoy it. I read the books, the comics, the kids stuff, I don't care. I try to consume as much of it as I can, so I like it all, including the prequels.
I'll be the first to admit, like, my kids watch the Ewok Adventures way more than I would like them to, but I suffer through it. Like, that's... If anybody doesn't like the prequels, they just need to watch the Ewok Adventures and the Holiday Special, and they'll understand, because it makes the prequels look like Shakespeare.
Yeah, and if you don't like Clone Wars, try watching Droids.
See, now, I watched Droids and Ewoks as a little kid, and I loved them. And like, Ewoks was basically just gummy bears.
The Holiday makes Star Droid look like Shaft.
It does.
All right, well, I guess we're going to wrap this up. I know, Aaron, you got a movie to catch.
I gotta go get in line for Harry Potter. But yeah, I guess the last thing I would like to talk about before I go, and I'll just catch up with my friends later because I did want to talk about this, was the preview for the Savage Press stuff. Did you guys check that out?
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome.
I think that just looks amazing, and I think that I'm thinking with this next episode, with the new models that they have for Ahsoka and Anakin and Obi-Wan, and with the Savage Press coming, I feel like things are about to ramp up. I'm starting to get excited, really excited for the season, more so than I already was. And I think just seeing that preview, and they're going to have the screening for some episodes coming up. I don't know if you guys heard about that.
Yeah.
So I already got my tickets to go see it in Philly. Nice. Going to go with a bunch of friends, and so I can't wait to see that, which is in a little bit, like in a few weeks. So I'm looking forward to that, and I think the season's going to just get better.
Yeah, and we'll I guess we'll have to have you back on again then, you know, not maybe to talk about the contents, because no spoilers here, but maybe the experience and, you know,
they're running the theatricals, like, around the same time as the episode, right? Or at best, it's a few days early, right?
No, it's actually a month early. It's they're running the movie's coming out, or not the movie, but they're showing it in theaters. I believe it's December 10th is when I'm going, and the episode doesn't air until January 7th.
Oh,
I believe is what it said in the fine print. So the people that go to see the screen are going to get to see it about a month early.
I can't complain, because that's about how soon I saw the season premiere, both 2 and 3, like about a month early. And I got to see the premiere of this season at ILM, so I'm not going to complain, but I am very disappointed that I can't go. Don't worry.
Yeah, you got to go to ILM, so you're right, you can't complain.
But I'm excited for the costume change. This is something I've been looking forward to since season 2 started.
Yeah. Did we see a preview for that at Celebration 5? I thought I heard someone saying something about costume change with Obi-Wan.
Well, you can see a costume change on Obi-Wan at for the first Savage Opress trailer. You can kind of see a different hairstyle and a slightly costume on Obi-Wan in that trailer.
Yeah, when they show the clone commandos, they Obi-Wan has his new look in that.
Yeah, that's
it's funny. Filoni mentioned it briefly at one of the panels that Ahsoka was going to look a little bit older, and I asked Ashley about it when I was doing an interview with her at Celebration 5, and she looked like a deer in headlights, and she panicked and had to go talk to Lucas. She's like, "What am I allowed to say about this? Am I allowed to say anything?" And it's like, calm down. They just mentioned it was changing a little bit. You don't have to talk about specifics. It was adorable.
What's really going on? Ahsoka's turning to the dark side, and this is her new look.
Oh man! If we start talking about Ahsoka's possibilities of how she's going to end this series out, that we'll be here for 2 hours.
Yeah,
we'll have to reschedule. We'll continue this discussion another time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, where can people find you, Brian?
I'm on Twitter. My name on Twitter is Swankmotron. No relation to Jason Swank whatsoever. BigShinyRobot.com. I write reviews of every episode of Clone Wars, usually the night they air, which is good, but all kinds of Star Wars news there. And I cover geeky stuff on Huffington Post, so people can find me there too.
All right. Where can people find you, Aaron?
Dang it, Brian. I thought I was following Jason Swank. I'm following you? No, you can find me on Twitter, basically, is where I do most of my updates, at AVGoins. I do have a website called JediDirectory.com, but it's kind of in a rebuilding phase right now, so it's not really a place that you can go for any current news, but we're definitely working on revamping that site, and hopefully within the next few months it'll have a new look and start being updated again.
Cool. Okay, you can find us. Okay, here's the list. GalacticVoyage.com, iTunes, Facebook.com/GalaxyFanboy, Facebook.com/@GalaxyFanboy, there we go. You can email us at GalaxyFanboy@yahoo.com, and I think that's it for us this week. Alright, thanks guys for joining us.
Before we go,
thank you.
When we asked Kyle Newman about what he thought about this episode, his reply was, "In the original draft, Zero was in love with Ben Quadraneros, not Snice Noodles. But they changed that character so to Sai to make him straight."
Let me plug something else. There's a Facebook fan page that Kyle and I plotted to start that says we want Ben Quadraneros on Clone Wars. So you should look that up on Facebook and join it.
Yes. Already a fan. Joined it a long time ago.
I think it's going to happen. I mean, it's going to happen. I'm calling it right now.
Cameo. You just walk by. There's a deleted scene to Zillow Beast where it shows after the electron bomb goes off, it cuts to Ben Quadraneros is practicing his pod racing skills, and then he just, the electron bomb destroys his pod and he smacks it. He goes flying.
I don't know about that, but I definitely think that you will see Ben Quadraneros in Clone Wars. It's going to happen because there's too much of a fan base right now with Kyle heading that up. It's going to happen.
Oh, I hope so.
Fans of him now, or is it a joke?
It's not a joke. It's no joke. It's serious.
This is real.
Ben Quadraneros is serious business.
The funny thing is, like, the majority of the Clone Wars fans, if they do put him in there, they aren't going to get the joke, because I'll admit, Kyle Newman does have a lot of fans, but there's a lot of people who watch Clone Wars that don't use the internet to talk to people like the Force cast and Kyle Newman.
That's so, all right. If it happens, the people that know it are going to love it. It's people will stand up off their couches and cheer. I know it's going to happen.
No, even if it's just something for us. I mean, they've done plenty of inside jokes and little hints. I actually, when I talked to Filoni in my interview about it, you can still watch this interview on YouTube. But he was like, you know, we do plenty of stuff for the fans. The average 8-year-old doesn't know who the hell Admiral Yularen is. But all the fans do know, and so they realize that he's the guy sitting at the conference table that Vader's obviously given a juicy promotion to for years served. And it's like, we install so much of that, as much as we can, for the fans, even though no one else gets it. And I think that if we get Ben, it's going to be a wink and a nod to guys like us who think it's hilarious.
Yep.
And we'll see it in a triple.
They should make an episode where Anakin's lightsaber gets stolen and he has to win a pod race to get it back. And yet his the top contester is Ben Quadraneros.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox. It's intended for informational and entertainment purposes only. Star Wars, all names, sound, the character, or any other Star Wars-related items are the registered trademarks of Lucasfilm or their respective trademark or copyright holders.